So tonight, it gives me great pleasure from all the way from Orchid, California.
Thank you. Thank you for such a warm welcome. My name's Cody. I'm an alcoholic. Actually, it's Cody Cowan, and I usually don't say my last name, and I don't know why. It's not like it's an anonymity thing, but that's my last name. Thank you, guys. Kristen, thank you for asking me to speak tonight. I never know what to do with my hands when I'm up here, so I'm going to try and keep them to myself. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in a suit and tie tonight. This is not my usual attire. In fact, I don't wear this for a profession. I wear this to court. But now I wear it to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And the reason I do that is because I want to speak to the people that are brand new in this meeting. I heard that there were three of you guys. And, you know, in a meeting of this size, usually if there's three that identify, there's three that don't. So if you're new, welcome. I want you guys to see that change is possible. That's why I'm wearing a suit. AA used to be a punishment for me. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 15 years old. I came in on a court card. I was probably up to my second or third juvenile arrest for underage drinking, minor in possession of alcohol. And as a punishment, the court system sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that's how I saw it, at least. It's punishment. You know, this was what I had to do. You know, I had to do 6 meetings in 6 months. And I was like, who could possibly do 6 meetings in 6 months? when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober at 28, I think I did 6 meetings in a weekend. So, you know, my how perspectives change in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, like I said, I got introduced to AA really young. I sat in the back. I didn't identify. I found all the differences I could find with you people. I didn't want what you had. I hated it here, man. This was my punishment, like I said, you know. And luckily for me, the consequences kept getting more and more severe. As I continued to drink, I got into a couple of minor car accidents where I got graced with DUIs. And then, a couple of arrests that led to me getting expelled from high school and sent to a rehab in Yakima, Washington. And this is all before I turned 18 years old. You know, and I'm grateful today that it was all before I was 18 because it's all on my juvenile record. So it's gone. It's like it never happened. So I want to get sober. I want to get sober pretty quick here. If I can not inhale my coffee. All right. So 18 years old runs around. And I've done a lot of stupid wreckage, caused a lot of problems, hurt a lot of people that I care about. But I didn't care. I was selfish and self-centered. I was only concerned with me and how I was going to get through it. And when I turned 18, I enlisted in the Marine Corps because that's naturally what drunks that are under 18 do, you know. And I found a perfect fit now in Alcoholics Anonymous, Freudian slip right there, in the Marines. Excuse me. One of these is mine, right? Does it matter which one? No? Who's running the show? No? Kristen? All right. Cool. They're both mine, and I might drink them both. You know, I noticed that even though I'm sober, and I have been, I still drink every fluid alcoholically. I turn things vertical. I do 12 o'clock drinks, you know. I drink coffee in the morning. I don't drink coffee at night. I don't care. I hate it when you leave a little bit left in your coffee cup, man. That's coffee abuse, you know. Like I said, the perception has changed a little bit. It's coffee abuse, not alcohol abuse anymore, you know. So anyway, all right. So I joined the Marine Corps, and I fit in great, man. I distinctly remember someone saying to me, you know, Cody, you have zero discipline in your body. How in the heck are you going to handle the Marine Corps? And And I always figured, well, I'd gain the discipline in the Marines, and that's kind of what happened. I took to the Marines like a duck to water. Now, I'd never really worked hard for anything in my life. Some things came natural to me. Some things were so difficult I just didn't even attempt them. So, like school. So I got into the Marines, and I tried. I tried really hard, and I found out that I excelled, and I had a really good trip through the Marine Corps. However, luckily for me, I took my alcoholism with me into the Marine Corps. And, you know, if you're 18 years old and looking to get around a bunch of other alcoholics, you know, the military is an awesome place to go. You know, everybody drank like I drank and lived, well, okay, I lied. Everyone I hung out with drank like I drank, lived like I lived, did what I did, you know. There were plenty of other guys and gals that were not behaving like I was, but I certainly wasn't going to hang around with them. They were no fun, you know. I tell this story sometimes just to talk about the obsession of my alcoholism. I went to a couple of countries on a deployment, and, you know, we went to Thailand, we went to Singapore, Australia, Hawaii, or that's still America, but whatever, Japan, all these different nations and all these beautiful tropical places, and the only thing I ever saw on any of those trips was the bar. That's all I ever saw. I got friends that would come back to the ship and show me pictures of them on, like, I think it's called PP Island, but I call it Fifi Island, I don't know, whatever, and they were, like, riding elephants, and looking at monkeys and checking out these old temples, and I was taking pictures in strip clubs. Like, I didn't have any skills to participate in life, man. I had no memory of that time period, you know. All the pictures that I have are me drunk in bars, and I just totally missed out on incredible opportunities. Opportunities that, you know, yet haven't come up again, you know. Not every day you get a free trip to Australia, you know. So yeah, I managed to fare pretty well in the Marine Corps. Somehow I managed to stay out of trouble. I couldn't seem to do that underage, but like my mind told me when I was underage, once I turn 21, it'll all be good. I won't get in any more trouble because they're just mad at me because I drink. So then I get out of the Marines. I did 4 years. I left under honorable conditions. I was ready to move on, and I had no direction. I moved to a big city, San Francisco, and I started studying alcoholism. I had my disease, which was growing considerably stronger, and I also had some other things that came with me from my deployments, and when I got to San Francisco, everyone was really nice, praised me for being a veteran, and I definitely played that card numerous occasions. You know, I drank for free a lot. Every holiday was a Marine Corps holiday to me. And I couldn't let that time in my life go. And as a result of that, I didn't know what to do for employment. So I sought out what every good infantryman does, and I applied in law enforcement, and I got a job. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a combat vet. My experience was in the combat theater, and all of a sudden, I'm supposed to operate on the city streets and protect and serve, and I had no skills with that. I pretty much, within 4 years, crashed that ship. I thought that I was doing a pretty good job in my professional life, but in my personal life, I was wreaking havoc, and what I was doing was blackout drinking. So if you drank like I drank, you would start drinking, or we would start drinking, and at some point in the night, the light switch would go off, as my wife likes to tell me. I don't know when that would happen. I didn't have any control over it. Some nights I'd be able to drink, you know, large quantities and be fine, and the next night I'd have two drinks and be blacked out. And blackouts for me could last anywhere between, you know, 18 hours or a weekend. And there's a reason for that. I have an allergy of the body that normal people don't have. When I consume alcohol, I see the people around me, and they're all doing exactly what I'm doing in my mind, right? And at some point, I black out, but I still keep going. Normal people pass out. They don't black out. They pass out. I black out. What a blackout is for me, I'm a rip-roaring tornado. I can run through your life and destroy everything, take from you. I can do terrible things. That's the spiritual malady of my disease. I can do terrible things I wouldn't normally do, but once I'm in a blackout, all bets are off. I've woken up in different states before. I could tell those stories for like the rest of my life and never tell all of them. All the people that knew my story better than me, I'm not around very much anymore. Things have changed. So I'm glad that I'm taking a moment for myself right now. I'm kind of regrouping here because I've kind of jumped around a little bit, but I know where I want to go with this. I knew early on that I was alcoholic. You guys told me what alcoholism was, and I could relate. I didn't want to admit that I could relate, but I could relate. So in the back of my mind, I gave myself every excuse in the book for why I wasn't an alcoholic. One of the main ones that made me not an alcoholic was that even though I blackout drank and I binge drink, I could go days without drinking. Sometimes even months. And I thought that an alcoholic couldn't do that. I thought an alcoholic needed to drink around the clock to that was what was an alcoholic, you know? And I found out pretty quickly getting into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that that's not the case. And everybody's alcoholism might be a little bit different, and that's okay. You know, that's part of this program. This program's a little bit different for each one of us. But like I said, you know, I used that excuse for a long time. I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous around 15 years old. I didn't get sober till I was 28. So my sobriety date's December 12th, 2013. I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous at 28 years old. I was living in my father's basement. I'd lost my job as a peace officer due to a felony for an assault with a deadly weapon off duty under the influence. My wife, whom I'd been married to for 1 year, had moved 350 miles away because she couldn't stand me. And like I said, I was literally broken. I was sleeping on a cot. I'd like to say I wasn't homeless, but I was on a cot and it wasn't mine. So, you know, it's kind of amazing how I could go from where I was through the little highs and the lows and stuff to this downward spiral. And drugs are also a part of my story, so if I offend you, I apologize, but, you know, the last 6 months that I was out there, I wasn't drinking. My last drink was Memorial Day weekend of 2013, and I woke up one morning, and I had a fresh set of, 13 stitches in my upper lip. I didn't know where I'd been or what I'd done. I had sand in my shoes, and I was still wearing my shoes. You know, and I had a bunch of new scars and scrapes, and I had these weird, or not weird, they were common, but these flashes of memory of what I'd done the night before or the weekend before. It had been a 3-day drunk. And I woke up, and this was no different than any other day. I didn't, wake up and say, you know, epiphany, you know. It wasn't like yeah, I'm done. No, it was like, God, I can't do this anymore. I was not, prior to coming into AA, I was not a religious guy. I didn't have God or spirituality in my life. And I think I did say something like, God, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't want help, but I can't do this anymore. And so I turned to the only other thing that I'd ever known that was comforting, and that was cannabis. And I did that for 6 months. And the reason I tell that story is because I know that me sharing that might be true for somebody else, you know? I did the weed thing for 6 months before I walked into AA to ask for help. And the reason that happened was I was smoking weed a little bit, and then a lot of it, and then all the time. And before I knew it, that thing that I used to say that didn't make me an alcoholic was that I didn't drink all the time. I sure smoked all the time. And suddenly my life was completely unmanageable. My last time using, I was in my dad's basement, and I had started 19 tasks, and they were all unfinished, and I suddenly got overwhelmed, and I was doing the whole You know, I was freaking out. I was having a panic attack, and I'd never had one of those before. And I distinctly remember what I did. I threw my bong in the trash, and I picked up the phone, and I had drug paraphernalia all over the house, cannabis all over the house. I had friends that grew. I got a lot of it. Called a friend, and was like, I don't know what to do. There's just too much going on. I need help. And he's like, are you loaded right now? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And he took me to an AA meeting, which I thought was weird. I thought I should have been in an NA meeting, but this guy was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I saw how this program changed him. So I go to this AA meeting, I pour my heart and soul out on my first share. It was awesome, man. You should have heard it. It's so hard. You guys don't know. If you did what I did and you done where I've done and been where I've been, you would have drank and used like me. And then this lady shared after me, and she was like, my son was 6 months old when he died in my arms because I was too high to follow the instructions of the 911 operator. And I was like, damn. I was just bitching about not being able to finish the tasks that I'd started. And she walked up to me after the meeting and told me I needed the big book more than she did. And she handed me her big book. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I got a little voice in the back of my head. Now, I was innately good at not listening to that voice when I was out there. But the second I got sober, that voice was really loud. And that voice said, this big book means something now, you know? I don't know. So I got in it, man. I asked that man that took me to an AA meeting to be my sponsor, and he said nope. Yeah, he did. Right? He said no. And I was like, why not? And he said, you know, man, I participated in your disease with you. I may have 7 years sober, but I participated in your disease, and I can't be your sponsor. But I know someone who can. And he introduced me to a man named Leonard Malone from Marin County. And Leonard was, Leonard drove a tow truck. He worked in the tunnel on the Golden Gate Bridge. There was a tunnel right after the Golden Gate Bridge. And Leonard was calm and soft-spoken and kind of stout little guy. And he dipped Copenhagen long cut, so I immediately found an appeal to him. And Leonard said, all right, let's get working on these steps. And I was like, okay. You know, so we walked around the Starbucks that we were sitting at, and we did steps 1 and 2, and then we got down on our knees in Denny's later at 3 in the morning and held hands and said the third step prayer. I repeated after him. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I said, okay, that's a beginning. Now I'm going to want you to write your 4-step, and this is an inventory. All right, we're going to talk about your greater defects. All right, we're going to talk about the people you've harmed, not just the people that have harmed you. All right. And but you're just going to make a list, all right? And I'm going to tell you exactly how to do it. We're going to start on the left side column. Just write some names. Who are you mad at? People, places, and institutions. Start writing that list, right? I think I got 13 names and stuff on there. And I was like, all right, I'm done, Leonard. Let's go. And he's like, keep going. And we met the next day. We met the 13th. And we started talking about fifth step in a Starbucks. I don't suggest that, but for a man of my condition, I needed to get going. I needed to feel like I was doing something. At least that's what Leonard said. So I did, you know. The big thing here, you know, and for the new people that I'm really talking to, it's about, I didn't know what the hell I was doing before I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how to function. I didn't have any life skills. I didn't have any people skills. I didn't have any professional skills. I was inept. In every manner of the being, you know, every manner of the word, you know, I just couldn't function. And so I put my trust and my faith in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and another man who I had never met. And he asked me to get down on my knees in Denny's and hold his hand. And I was like, this is weird. And amazingly so, though, since that day, I haven't found it necessary to get in put anything in my body that alters my state of mind, you know. It was really accelerated steps that I did in the beginning. I worked up to step 9. I made an 8-step list from my 4-step list. It was really short. And there's this weird thing in Alcoholics Anonymous where if you pay attention and you work hard enough, you'll see that there are these things that we used to call coincidences occur. And these coincidences are not, in fact, coincidences I've come to find in Alcoholics Anonymous. When something happens that I could have never foreseen happening and it's too good to be true or too real to be, you know, real, that's usually God working in my life or a higher power. Oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about God. That's going to happen. God is working in my life. Sit down, Brennan. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so that's what happens, man. I'm working on this 8-step with this strange dude, and I haven't lived in this town since I was a kid, and I moved away when I was 18, and all of a sudden I'm working on this 8-step list, and I with no direction or no suggestion, I run into people on my 8-step list that I need to make amends to. And these people are people I haven't seen in over a decade. I've been on 2 deployments. I have been around the world. I've seen some things. And I'm all of a sudden smack dab in front of the person that I owe an apology to. And it was weird. One of them was the local police officer whom I cursed, man. I hated that guy. I got in fist fights with him before. Went to jail for that, you know, naturally. He won, always. You know, and I run into him and he's a retiree. I have every right to curse him out 3 ways through Sunday. I'm 3 days sober and I run into him outside of a homeless shelter. He's working as a security guard. I want to call him a security guard. I want to call him every belittling term I can. But for some coincidence, I don't know, my brain just automatically shifted, man, and all I wanted to do was apologize to this man. I mean, this guy, I thought, made my teens hell. I went to juvenile hall on multiple occasions, and his name was signed at the bottom of my ticket. But I didn't, and I walked up to him, and I did the best amends that I possibly could. Sir, I've wronged you. I have talked about you in the worst light to the wrong people. You know, I even went after your family, you know. I'm so sorry. I don't treat people that way anymore. Something to that degree. And he, you know, he said, "That's okay, Cody. I knew you didn't mean any harm back then either." Wow. Alcoholics Anonymous, man. It's hard for me to get emotional in front of a bunch of people, especially a room full of men. But I might tonight, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a heart again. You know, I have the ability to listen to that little guy on my shoulder that tells me when there's right and wrong. I was so good at ignoring him for so long. He's loud today, you know. He's telling me right now it's okay. You know, there's a woman in this room, and she gave me a really big God. And that God is just chilling behind me right now. I'm good, man. I'm good up here. This program will work for those of us who work it, right? I had 17 days sober. I had made a few amends. I was working on my 9-step. And my wife was like, "It's time for you to come down here." She had moved down here. And so I packed up all 18 things that I owned in my truck, and I called my sponsor and told him I was moving on, and he's like, "Come to the men's stag meeting tonight." I was like, "Okay." Go to the men's stag, and he introduces me to a former Marine, and they give me a bunch of suggestions. They told me to listen to Joe and Charlie on tape when I drive down there, get all the steps in on tape. It's, you know, it's a 5-hour drive or whatever, 6-hour drive. And so I, you know, obviously I didn't listen to it on tape, that doesn't exist, but I listened to it on a, like, podcast or something, and I listened to Joe and Charlie, and I got down here and I wanted to be the best AA ever, you know? And any of you who saw me when I was new, and there's a few of you in this room, Steve met me on the very first day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous in Santa Maria. I walked into the Golden Group. I got down here at 9 o'clock at night, and you people don't have meetings after like 7, so that was weird. Where I came from, there was a meeting on every block, every hour. And I guess, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, so Steve meets me the next morning, and I'm looking for a sponsor. And my sponsor suggested, he's like, "You got 24 hours to get a temporary sponsor." So I asked these 2 strange men that I'd never met before, but I knew they were in Alcoholics Anonymous. "What are you guys doing today? Can we hang out?" I don't know, it was a Thursday, man, or something. Yeah, and they did. They it was Billy N. and Steve. We went on a hike. We went on a hike. Billy was the first guy I met. I asked Billy to be my temporary sponsor. He helped me find my sponsor. And we went on a hike, and I got introduced to Santa Maria AA, and I found out Santa Maria AA is the same as Marin County AA, which is the same as San Francisco AA, which is the same as LA AA. There is no different. You know, the faces and the stories may change, but the program's still the same. The steps on the wall are still the same. Same steps. So I started my steps over with this man, Kevin G. He's not here tonight. I wish he was. But Kevin was kind and well. He was loving. He wasn't always kind. He tried to be, right? So, but Kevin suggested, 90 meetings in 90 days. I don't care if you got 17 days. You're nothing special. 90 meetings in 90 days. You'll have three weekly commitments and a speaker meeting commitment, because you guys got the flip-flop, or we got the flip-flop meetings down here. And what else did he say? Oh, yeah, you're going to join the thing we do Saturdays? Come on, Kristen, help me out here. The committee. You're going to join the committee. You're going to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I did, man. I did all those things. I joined. I had a book study meeting that I had a coffee commitment at. I had a men's stag commitment, coffee commitment at. I had a greeter commitment. And then I did a speaker meeting commitment. And it was because of those commitments. I used to say some things where, I can't be the greeter. I don't know anybody. Well, that's why you're the greeter, stupid. Yeah. I remember in the beginning, I can't make coffee. I barely drink coffee. That's why you're going to make coffee, bro. You need to learn how to make coffee. You know, you're going to wash cups. You're going to pick up cigarettes. I don't smoke. That's why you're picking up cigarette butts. It's about getting outside of self. I'm selfish and self-centered. That is the root of my problem. You know, the only way out of that is if I'm doing something for you or thinking about you. Louie, I'm always thinking about you, buddy. You know, so that's what happened for me. The first 90 days, I went to 7 meetings a week or more. I got in the middle of the herd. I met everybody. I know most of the people in this room as a result of the first 90 days in the program. It wasn't simple. They said it was simple, but I didn't feel like it was. I basically just did what someone else suggested in the beginning. Every time I came with a good idea, oh, Kevin, I got to tell you about this sweet idea I just had. He'd be like, why don't you save it for a year? We'll talk about it then. My ideas were so bad. He would be like, put that on hold. Let's put that up on the shelf and we'll get it down in like a year. You know what I mean? Like, and they had expiration dates, because like the next 10 minutes I'd forget that idea. You know, I was concocting things constantly, man. I had ideas going out the wazoo. I mean, I had ideas how to fix you, you know? I remember I came, when I first started, I was a bit of an evangelicus, man. This is about attraction, not promotion, you know? I remember I probably had 60 days sober or something like that, and I took a newcomer to coffee. And that's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be hanging out with newcomers and talking to them, but I'm supposed to be doing that with my sponsor or with someone that's got some time. There's nothing wrong with me sharing my experience, strength, and hope, but there is something wrong with me giving direction at 60 days sober. I don't have any direction myself, you know? And I distinctly remember listening to him talk, and then I couldn't wait to I was chomping at the bit. Let me tell you about me, bro. Let me tell you how good this AA is, man. If you do it my way, you know, we'll all be in trouble. No, I didn't tell him that. I told him how wonderful I was, you know. I had all the badges when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. The point is, or the cool thing about this is, we can screw up in AA and you're not going to get kicked out. The big thing is, we suggest you don't drink and you work the steps. You know, you don't drink or use. You know, in the Marine Corps, I did a bunch of parajumping, right? Jumped out of airplanes. It is suggested that you pull your ripcord. It's not required. You know, it's not a requirement. They don't tell you, okay, when you jump out of the bird, 500 feet from the ground, pull your ripcord. They just say, jump. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot like that, man. It is suggested that we work the 12 steps. It is suggested that we get a sponsor before we work the 12 steps, you know? It is suggested that you go to meetings, you know? But, you know, like every true AA, you know, I want to do it a bit of my way. I want to add my flair to it. And every time I do that, I get myself into trouble. Every single time, you know. I start playing things my way, and it's not going to go very well. The cool thing that has happened since I've been here, though, I got a little over 2.5 years sober now, and I've had the opportunity to work the steps with a couple different people, and a couple different people work them a couple of different ways, but it's still the steps. And every time I tried to be as rigorous and thorough as I possibly could, and each time more stuff came up and totally different stuff. There's a bunch of trains of thought to this. You know, I've heard that once you work the 12 steps, you know, you just focus on 10, 11, and 12, and that's all. It covers all the steps, you know. And I've been of the thought that once I work the 12 steps, I'm going to do them again. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with someone different, but I am going to do them again because more will be revealed. That's something you hear us say all the time. And every time that I've worked the steps, more has been revealed. So when I got down here and I got in with a new sponsor and I started working the steps, step one was different. I did step one walking around Starbucks the first time. This guy had me writing on paper. I was like, what is this all about? You know, he's doing it wrong. Right? I tried to find ways to say that my current sponsor was doing it wrong. And if I'm looking for ways, I can find them. I wrote a new step one, and it was kind of weird, you know. How is my life unmanageable, you know? Really, I mean, I'm living in a basement doing, you know, whatever. And it was destroyed, man. My second step is still something that I struggle with today. I want you guys to know, if you're new, you don't have to get this thing perfect, you know. We're aiming for progress, not perfection, right? It's about spiritual progress. Working on my second step, it's something that I'm going to be doing for a while, you know. I came in here pretty atheistic. Now I know that there's something bigger than me out there. I know that that thing has got my back, and I even have a face for it now, thanks to this woman in the front row, but I don't always trust it. I don't always believe. You know, I know it's there, but it's hard to get. People say from your head to your heart, and I'm kind of starting to understand that idiom now. You know, it is kind of hard for me to be like in there. You know, there it is. Step three for me, if you're new or fairly new, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my friend that wouldn't sponsor me said, you know, we've been waiting for you. And I was like, you guys been watching me? Like, that's right. Drink like I do. AA pays attention. He might have said that to 100 new guys, but whatever. He was waiting for me. He was waiting for the opportunity to share with me what's been shared with him. And what the thing that he shared with me was that, you know, those defects of character, those mistakes that you made over time, those things that you thought you'd never live down, that you could never make right, you know, those things are going to be gold one day when you're working with a new guy. Or, you know, when you're sharing at a meeting and someone hears where you've been and where you've gone, you know. And I didn't realize that right away either, man, but it's true. Like, that statement that he said suddenly, like, fluffed off a ton of fear that I had built up around the things that I'd done. You know, like I said, I was a blackout drinker, so a lot of the things that I did, I don't remember. I could run into you at the mall, and you might be the one that wants to, you know, punch me in the face. Or, you know, I might have really hurt you. And I wouldn't have remembered it. I had a really terrible path of destruction during blackouts, you know. Those little flashes or snippets of memory, those ended up being gold, because those are experiences that I can now share with somebody else, you know. When I got into step four, that was where the big fear came up for me. The second time, you know, my 13 people on my first four-step list was not adequate. That was not sufficient. That was not thorough. My second four-step list was a little better. I still struggle with that list. You know, there's still names on there that I can't make amends to. I shared them with another human being. I shared them with my higher power. It suddenly became real to me. You know, it's not just words on paper. It's not just something that I did. It's real. These are people's feelings, emotions, pocketbooks. These are things that I did, you know. And it, you know, the blackout excuse isn't an excuse, you know. I liked my fifth steps because my sponsor sat down and he pulled up another chair. And he said, that one's for God. And I was like, that's weird. And then we're going to talk about this stuff. And I distinctly remember my sponsor saying, right in the beginning when we were writing our fourth step, write down the three things that you're going to not tell me. And those were like the things that I was going to take to my grave. Since getting sober and working the steps and working with new guys, I've shared that information with almost a dozen men. And it, every time I do it, it has less power over me. You know, those were things from childhood. Those were things that make the feels happen. Those were things that I don't want to share with you. I'll probably get emotional if I do, you know. And, you know, we're men. I'm a Marine. I don't want to cry in front of you, but I'm going to. You know, that's what's going to happen when I get to that place. And as a result of these you know, microscopic spiritual steps that I've taken, suddenly I'm okay with going there now, you know. Step five happened, and I distinctly remember showing up at the men's stag meeting afterwards. I did it on a Thursday night. I show up to the men's stag meeting afterwards, and I was like, I feel icky. Like, I thought this was going to feel great, and it didn't. All I did was rip the Band-Aid off of a bunch of old, festering, maggoty wounds that I'd caused over the years, and it was, I thought it was really ugly, and I shared that at the meeting, and you wouldn't be surprised that 30 guys said the same thing. They felt either the same exact way I did, or they felt totally different, and they were going to tell me why. And so, you know, we moved pretty abruptly through my God steps, man, my 6 and 7, you know, those are the ones that separate the men from the boys, right? And it's really, really hard for me to ask to have my character defects removed. Some of them I really like, some of them I don't like, but I don't want them gone, you know. And some of them I don't even want to look at, you know. But I've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous that if we all took our character defects and threw them in the center of the room, we'd be clamoring to get ours back, you know. That's a positive way of thinking for me, you know. It means that my past behavior is it can be gone, you know, if I want it, you know. God doesn't find too hard of terms for those who seek Him, and I kind of have a misunderstanding of a forgiving God today. You know, it's kind of goofy, and you guys might laugh at this, but one of the big issues that's been hanging me up for 2.5 years on the God topic is that I didn't have a face for my God. I kind of did this whole, like, I've seen it in the books and the cartoons and stuff where it's this dude in a robe with a cane and a beard and long hair. And I'd heard in Alcoholics Anonymous people share that, you know, they came up with their own conception of God. I even heard that doorknob thing, which makes no sense to me. But, you know, there's all these things. Like, you could do your own thing. And it was because of that someone recently asked me this question and said, you know, what does your God look like? What does it act like? And I was stuck. Those are complex questions for an atheist, you know? Like, I have no idea what my God looks and acts like. That's probably one of the things that's been hanging me up. I don't know what I'm praying to. I just pray to this mystical spirit of the universe, you know what I mean? Those are words in our text. That's what I use, you know, the all-powerful, you know? It wasn't working because I wasn't really using it. I was using it when I needed it, you know. I was pulling out God when I needed God. And that's pretty much how I did it in the first, like, 16, 18 months of sobriety. I would say the third step prayer when my stresses were at the max, when I was thinking about stuff that I'd done in the past, couldn't go to sleep at night, or when, you know, I was acting a little in some bad behavior. I'd turn to the third step prayer, and I wouldn't picture anything. I'd just say the words. And today, my image of my higher power is really big. I don't know if you guys remember the cartoon Aladdin, but there's a scene where the genie busts out of the lamp, and he goes, "Power, all phenomenal cosmic power." He, like, clamps these things, and he's like, huge. big genie, you know, and he's like, itty bitty living space, right? He's got a little sense of humor, but totally huge, cosmic, can control things and move things, and you know, kind of pray to the genie in Aladdin now. I'm just like, yo, big guy, need some help. So these are my prayers, man. These are my, I'm going to let you guys in on my 11th step, all right? So in the morning, it's help, and at night, it's thank you. And I envision the genie from Aladdin. I don't know why it's working right now, but it's totally working. I totally just feel a sense of ease and comfort from praying to that image. And that person really helped me see that. I had did some writing about it. I did some talking about it. You know, I spoke to my sponsor about it, and we were both on board with that same thing. So so that was a really amazing breakthrough for me. Was getting an image for a higher power. I don't know if anyone struggled with that, but step 8 and 9. Let's see. For me, the eight list keeps increasing. I keep remembering things that I did, or unfortunately sometimes making new ones, and I try to handle them at once. But my ninth step is like my name is Earl. There's a bunch of names on that list, and I keep scratching them off, and it's very slow. I've talked about this. I've had some negative. Not everybody said, it's okay, Cody. We don't care that you screwed us over and took money from us and punched us in the face. I had one guy tell me that, you know, where I could go. And that was really kind of shocking. But at the same time, I had an opportunity to clear my side of the street. And that was a powerful thing for me. I felt lighter, even though it wasn't received. And that dude's name is still on my 9-step amends list. So if it ever comes up that I can still work with that again, I will. In AA, that seems to be what happens. Maybe I wasn't needed at that particular moment in time, but I might be in the future. So the 9th step is it's forgiving, but it's never ending for me. And somewhere in the 9th step, we start getting these promises that come true. You know, and fear of economic insecurity will leave us. Well, economic insecurity is not leaving me, but the fear of it might. You know. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. That came true when I started to see my handicaps as gold, you know, my handicaps as assets I could help other people with. You know, those promises started to come true when I started to work the 9th step, you know. Step 10 tells me that I can practice that every day. You know, I can try not to step on the toes of my fellows, make them retaliate. I can try not to do that. And if I do, I need to rectify it pretty quickly. Now, I was given a writing outline to do on my 10 step, which made it super clear to me. You know, who's the person? What's the cause? What did I do? You know, what's my part? And after working the 12 steps, I can find my own part. I still talk about it with my sponsor, and we talk about it at once, but I can usually find it without, there's 5 things for me, man. You know, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, or something else that I forget the 5th one. it's usually always that. Something that I have is threatened, or something that I want is threatened. And that's how I act out, you know? And I hurt people to get what I want, you know? I'm going to wrap up here pretty quickly. Step 11, like I said, help and thank you. Meditation for me has been pretty interesting. Today, actually, if I could speak every day, I'd be good at meditation because I meditated. But I can't seem to sit still, and that's not what meditation's about. Maybe it's not necessarily about sitting still for me. Maybe I need to walk and meditate, or run and meditate, or, you know, it just is about quiet time. I've heard people drive to work with no music. I've heard people talk about swimming or running or sitting, and once they hear the birds, they know they're meditating. I've heard a whole list of things because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I listen to you and your experiences. That's how you shape my future ones, you know? step 12, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics who still suffer and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Well, the hardest thing there is practicing these principles in all of my affairs. I've gotten to the point now where I actually enjoy carrying the message. I enjoy sharing with other people. I enjoy sponsorship, and I enjoy being sponsored. That man that told me no when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous at 2 years sober, he said yes, he would be my sponsor. I said this the other night, and I really like it. Earl H. says, don't find a man who has what you want. Find a man who has what he wants to be your sponsor. I really like that. I found a guy who has what he wants, you know, and does the deal. And I work with that guy, and he's coming down here. He lives up in San Francisco, and he's coming down here next weekend to speak, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, he saved my life. That man brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. He came to my house and took that paraphernalia and all those drugs and all the stuff that I was too weak to throw away, and he took them and he disposed of them for me. And he brought me in and he gave me a warm place to land. You know? So how do I work step 12? You know, I sponsor a couple guys. I go to meetings and I share. When I'm asked to speak, I always say yes. I suit up and I show up. I try not to curse out of respect for the program that saved my life, at least at the podium. I might curse in the parking lot, but up here, I try and show people that I have respect for this thing, you know what I mean? And lastly, I continue to keep trying to do the right thing, you know? I read the book. I listen to speakers on YouTube and on my AA app and all that, and I like going to outside meetings too. I like to go travel sometimes, you know, go check out a meeting in a different area. I like to go down to the men's stag meeting, Junkyard Dogs in Santa Barbara, and it's a pretty powerful meeting. And I take other people with me when I go, you know. The way that life is today, I have a 18-month-old daughter, and I was laying down with her to give her kisses and say goodbye tonight. I'm glad that everybody showed up here, even though it's Game 7, Warriors versus Cavs, and you know, we saw the U.S. Open today, and there's a lot of stuff happening today. It's Father's Day. Thank you to all the fathers that showed up, you know, and it's about doing something for someone else. That's step 12 to me, you know. As a byproduct of step 12, I feel better, so... thank you guys for listening to me share, and thanks again, Kristen, for asking me to lead. I appreciate it.